want to thank all of you for being here. I had to quite, but I almost promised that we were going to start the letters with you. And we will, but we're going to do something else as a final piece before that. To whom was the book of Revelation written? Seven churches becomes the easy answer. Who was in those seven churches that merited or honored or deserved that way?
All of them were divisions in the church. They each had a separate problem.
Yeah, but they had something in common.
Well,
they had
a common.
No, the original writing of Revelation was for people who were undergoing severe persecution. Now, yes, they were gathered together at churches, the church had promised, we'll see those when we get into the letter. So I want to make sure we step back and finish a picture that I tried to give a start to the other day. If you were experiencing persecution at levels that you had never seen, all because of your faith in the Lord, what would your thought be? If you've been here a while, you know what the answer is. If you haven't been here, just relax and check it out. This is a quiz for the people who have been here. Where is Jesus? And why isn't he doing something about it? And as much as anything else, the letter of Revelation, the book of Revelation, is written to address that question. If you look through the book of Revelation, you find it seven times. It shows you where Jesus is. And I want to deal with that before we get into the letter. And we've been putting that off for a few weeks. Now, what's the first picture that you get? What's the first answer to that question? That was in chapter 1. We worked on that a few times. I'm waiting to see your chance. It's in chapter 1. The picture we have of Jesus is that he is in the middle of what? Yeah, well, that's kind of represent. He's in the middle of his church. Now, there's some people who think that the seven churches represent seven physical churches and not six and not eight. And there's others who say the number seven represents completion, and so therefore he's in the middle of these churches, whatever their number and wherever they are. And the picture representative comes to them. Speaking about sitting and then he's spoken to office. But the picture is, whichever way you hear that, where is Jesus? He's on earth, in the middle of the church. What else does that picture tell you about Jesus? Chapter 1. He's on earth, he's in the middle of the church. The churches are represented by lampstands, right? But the picture you have of Jesus, he's got something in hand. And it tells you what that is. What do you have in hand? Seven stars. And later in the chapter, it says what those seven stars represent. What those seven stars represent. It says that there's angels in the churches, but the word angel is one of those transliterated words. And the literal word means messenger. Some people think it means the church has an angel. Some people think the term is one that would be used for the leadership of the church. I like that one. I think when you get into chapter 2 and 3 in the letters when it says, write this to the angel of the church of so-and-so, it would make a lot more sense to say write this to the leaders of the church of so-and-so. There's two possible ways to explain that. For the morning, what I'm going to state the first of those, he's in the middle of the church with the leaders. In his hand. Now, let me make sure that you see why this becomes very significant and powerful. If persecution comes to a church, he gets hit first. That's where he started. Why is that? Almost always true. I'll tell you why later, the church might struggle up and die. So, the picture is he's in the middle of the churches. He's got the leaders in his hand. It may look like the leaders under attack by the world, but that's temporary. So it's permanent. that Jesus himself, Jesus was, Jesus protection. So, how many more answers are there? Six, seven answers to this question, where is Jesus? That's what we're looking at. That's the first one. You had an assignment a few weeks ago. I haven't been trying to keep up with which assignment goes with which week. About 2 weeks or 3 weeks ago, you had an assignment to go through. I answered anything to that. Just relax. But those of you who sat down here right over there, you had an assignment to go look for other places where answers are addressed to this question. Where's the next one? Did you find it in chapter 5? Did you find it in chapter 5? I guess not. So let's go look. Now, you can't talk about chapter 5 until you first talk about chapter 4. Chapter 4 and 5 are sort of a unit. So let me start chapter 4, verse 1. Chapters 1, 2, and 3, the picture of Jesus in the churches, the message to the churches in chapter 2 and 3. We'll go back and pick that up starting late today and continue next week. So chapter 4, verse 1, then in my vision I saw a door open in heaven and heard the same voice speaking to me. The voice like a trumpet saying, come up here and I will show you what is to take place in the future and what follows in the picture of God and God's throne and the setting in which God's throne exists, which includes 24 elders standing around it. 24 is twice 12. What does 12 represent? Gotta work on those numbers a little bit. You know what 12 represents? God's faithful people. In the Old Testament, there were 12 tribes. In the New Testament, there are 12 disciples. You see that number 12, you're seeing God's faithful people. You see 24, you might be thinking about God's faithful people, Old Testament or New Testament, old, late, recent, whatever. But when you come down through here, verse 1 of chapter 5, I saw that in the right hand of the one sitting on the throne, that's in God's hand, there was a scroll written on back and front and sealed with seven seals. And I saw a powerful angel who called to the Lord in loud voice, who is worthy to open the scroll and break its seals? But there was no one in heaven or on the earth or under the earth who was able to open the scroll and read it. And I wept too, because nobody could be found to open the scroll and read it. But one of the elders said to me, do not believe. What? The lion of the tribe of Judah, the root of David, has triumphed. He was in the scroll and his seven seals. And I saw in the middle of the throne with his four living creatures and the circle of elders, a lamb that seemed to have been sacrificed. The seven horns and seven eyes, which are the seven spirits of God sent out over the whole world. The lamb came forward to take the scroll from the right hand of the one sitting on the throne. And what followed was worship at a level that's hard to imagine. First Jesus. Jesus is behind me. Where is he? You are? Not in this picture. Pause at this moment. In the first hour, I put something like this up and it bothered some people, so anybody sure it doesn't bother you. A long time ago, my English teachers taught me that if I put an F after something, it says end on the following pages or the bottom verses. So if you start chapter 5, verse 1, and keep going for a while, you'll see what we're talking about, like what that means. Don't be bothered about that. He's in heaven. Now, what does the scroll represent? Go back to chapter 4, look at the tail end of verse 1. I'm going to tell you what's going to take place. The focus is on the future. So I'm going to tell you what's going to take place. The scroll represents what? It
says on the side of the scroll. On the good things on one side, all the bad things on the other.
The tail end of the other represents what? All the future. Even Israel.
Yeah.
And then you got the scroll. Where's Jesus? In heaven with all of human history under this control. That's the picture that you're getting out of the heaven side. What's the first answer that Revelation gives you? Where's Jesus? He's on earth in the middle of the church. The leadership of the church is under his control and in his protection. No matter what the world does, it's all temporary. What's the second answer? He's in heaven. All of human history. in this control. God said, they start opening the scroll. And all kinds of things start happening. But in chapter 7, verse 9, something good comes up. I mean, notice, and that is just kind of thought for verse 9 to keep going for a while. My translation is verse 9. After that, I saw that there was a huge number, impossible for anyone to count, of people from every nation, race, tribe, and language standing in front of the throne and in front of the Lamb, dressed in white robes, holding palms in their hands, shouting a loud voice, "Salvation to our God who sits on the throne and to the Lamb," and their followers, other words from the angels and from the elders and from the other creatures and from all these people. Verse 13, one of the elders then spoke to me. Now, what follows is a structure that may look a little awkward, so let me translate a little bit or explain to you what's being said. One of the elders walked up to John and said, "Do you understand what you're saying?" And John replied, "No, I don't. Would you please help me understand?" I read the words that are there, capital and stilted. Do you understand what you're saying? You certainly tell me. It's basically, "Do you understand what you're saying?" "No, I don't. Would you please help me understand?" Okay. Here's what the elders said. Middle of verse 14. "These are the people who have been through the great trial. They have washed their robes white again in the blood of the Lamb. And that is why they are standing in front of God's throne and serving Him day and night at this sanctuary. And the one who sits on the throne will spread his tent over them, that they will never hunger or thirst again. Sun and scorching wind will never plague them. Because the Lamb who is at the heart of the throne will be their shepherd and will guide them to springs of living water, and God will wipe away all tears from their eyes." Now, there can be arguments about the specifics and details here, but in general, who are these people? The chapter 7, verse 9 says, come from every people, nation, race, tribe, and language, and are in such numbers as not to be counted. People who died for their faith. Now the details are, when did they die? Did they die during the tribulation? Is there a tribulation? Did they die during it? Did they die before it? Did they die after it? Set that detail aside. Where is Jesus? He's in heaven doing what? Welcoming home the ones who died in and for their faith. Welcome in home. Those who have died in and for their faith. That's where Jesus. Where's Jesus? In the middle of the church. On earth, in the middle of the church. Where else is Jesus? In heaven. All Jesus is there is trouble. And? In heaven, welcome me home, those who die. Valerie Carter lost her mom. Valerie Carter can take on her. I believe. There are some who think that even I'll say, maybe not, maybe this is not a group. I think this is more general than that. Maybe, maybe not. Everybody was a great trial. Let's set that question aside. Let's look for number four. Now, let me go back. Those of you who have done your homework, do you know where the next one is? Anybody? Okay. Well, I'm going to tell you where it is. You're allowed to find it, but you're not allowed to read it yet. Okay. I can't do that, I'm not going to tell you where it is. Can you do that? Okay, well, I want you to, where are you right now? In fact, chapter 7, right? Hold that place. And I want you to find chapter 14, verse 1. And as soon as you found it, put your hand there and come back to chapter 7. But it's not in chapter 7 you've got to look at before you're doing things in chapter 14. Have you done that? I got a court case. As soon as you found it, so read it. Just put stuff back to chapter 1. Go to chapter 7. Done that? Don't you? Alright. Chapter 7, we started at verse 9. In between chapter 6, verse 1, and chapter 7, verse 8, some of those seals on that scroll are being opened. Pretty terrible things starting to happen. And there's a point in chapter 7, verse 1, that something very interesting happens. That's what I want to take you through. Next, I saw four angels standing at the four corners of the earth, holding back the four winds of the world to keep them from blowing over the land or the sea or any tree. And I saw another angel rising where the sun rises, carrying the seal of the living God, who called in a powerful voice to the four angels, whose duty it was to devastate land and sea. Wait, he says, before you do any damage on land or sea or to any of the trees, until we can put the seal on the forehead of the servants of our God. And I heard how many had been sealed. 144,000 out of all the tribes of Israel. That goes in the verse of Jonah 2. Do you know it? So, okay? Here's what I want you to see. There's a pause in the judgment being poured out on the earth until 144,000 people can be sealed on that part. Alright. Who are those 144,000? Try to stay general, try not to go through details. Who are those 144,000? They are people who have responded to God's call and become God's children. Now, it says tribalism, so most people think, okay, these people coming out of the Jewish group. If the church has been raptured by this point, when the church is gone, these people start to respond, this is what that's looking. That may be so. There's a lot of themes of commentators that walk in that direction. The others who say, well, Paul has said, the true children of Abraham are the ones who are children of faith. God in Israel includes other people. Possibly this is talking about something a little different. So, without choosing between those two today, let me simply say, these are people who have responded. They are God's faithful people in the middle of some really hard times. And what happened? God's putting a sign of protection on them, right? There's no sign of heaven here right now, right? So here's a pause. Angels are taking care of putting down the right. Now go to chapter 14. Now go to chapter 14. And let's start reading in verse 1. If you got that background, you're ready to start here. Next in my vision, I saw Mount Zion, and standing on it, the lamb who had with him. Who? 144,000 people, all with his name and his father's name, written on that card. Let's put this together. Where is Jesus here? Did you have it or her? Where is it? I said he's about God. Where's my God? That's Jerusalem. What's in Jerusalem? The temple.
Yeah.
And he's standing on Mount Zion, which is the side of the temple. Standing. Put that word down. Where is he? He's on earth and he's standing. Where is he standing? He's standing where the temple is standing. Right. But if you've been in here the last couple of weeks, you've heard a couple of things that may help you here. Because there's more than one way to read it. Is he physically in the country that we call Israel, in the city we call Jerusalem, on top of a certain piece of earth we call a mountain or a hill? Or is there another way to read it? I'm not saying reading it that way is wrong. I think I want to remind you of something. Paul said four places, and Peter said a couple of places, God's building a temple. And it's not a physical temple this time. Where's God's temple today? Where? Wherever God's people are. You got a cornerstone. Make yourself living stones. Put yourself close to Him. But maybe for the minute, He's on earth, standing with God's temple. And God's temple is God's people. Maybe that for the minute. Take your choice. But whichever way it ends up, where's He standing? He's standing with those who stand for God. That's what that loving Lord was about. Protected back there in chapter 7. And now, where's Jesus? Jesus is right there with them. Whatever it is they're going through, whichever period of time they're going through, whoever the people happen to be, where's Jesus? He's with people who are faithful to God. People who stand for God will find Jesus in the kingdom. Lots of details we can add to that. But I think this is something I hope you can be sure. That's what he's so far. Where is Jesus? He's on earth in the middle of his churches. Where is Jesus? He's in heaven. With all of human history under his control. Where is Jesus? In heaven, welcoming home the people who have responded to this faith. The people who have died in and for their faith. And where else is he? He's on earth. Standing in the middle of those who are still going through the hard times for their faith. How many got so far?
Four.
Where's the next one? Something better, right? Next is in chapter 19. And you're allowed to find chapter 19. As soon as you find it, or you find chapter 6. Just like this, we'll put your hand there. As soon as you find chapter 19, put your hand there, and go back to find chapter 6. Find chapter 19. Hold your place. Put a marker there, and then come right back to chapter 6. Don't read anything over there. Just come back to chapter 6. Now, what does chapter 6 and 7 talk about? The field started to be opened, and all kinds of things, terrible things started to happen. Chapter 6 is where all that began. In my vision, I saw the Lamb break one of the seals, and I heard one of the four living creatures shout at a voice like thunder, "Come." And immediately, what did I see? What did John say he saw? A white horse. And its rider was holding a bow. That's a weapon of war. And he was given a victor's crown, and he went away with victory after victory. Following the white horse came a rider on a red horse, came a rider on a black horse, came a rider on a pale horse. The four horses are coming out. A lot of people say, well, that's a white horse. Victory, that must be Jesus. The description is really, really short. And there's no description in there that seems to match up with the descriptions of Jesus he's sending forth. That's simply war. War where evil is in control and evil has some things. The contrast I want you to see is the contrast in chapter 6, verse 1, and that white horse and that rider in chapter 19. And the white horse and the rider over there. You're not going to find it in verse 1. You're going to go down to verse 11. Chapter 19. Verse 11. And follow. And now I saw heaven open, and white horse appeared. Heaven opens and a white horse appears. That horse is heading for the earth. Its rider was called trustworthy and true. In uprightness he judges and makes war. His eyes were flames of fire. He was crowned with many coronets. The name written on him was known only to himself. His clothes were soaked in blood. He is known by the name, the Word of God. And behind him, dressed in linen of dazzling white, rose the armies of heaven on white horses. From his mouth came a sharp sword with which to strike the unbelievers. He is the one who will rule them with an iron scepter and tread out the wine of Almighty God's spiritual retribution. On his cloak and on his thigh, a name was written, King of Kings and Lord wars. He said it's the difference in the description between chapter 6, verse 1, and chapter 19, verse 11. You see the difference in the description. So, he's come out of heaven. He's come to earth. And what's he doing? He's winning victory. Permanent victory. By the power of his blood. There's one stream in the commentators that said that battle is in the far distant future. There's another stream of commentators that that battle is going on right now. Paul said in one place, we do not fight the flesh and blood. We fight the power and principalities that are outside the counter thing. Some people think this is a picture of far future and one final battle and one particular time is happening. Others think this battle is already run. This battle is already engaged, and the ultimate victory is going to be. So where's number 6? Number 6 is in chapter 22. You can't read chapter 22, verse 1. Until you read chapter 21, verse 1, because that gives you the study. Chapter 19 and chapter 20, everything is gone. Look at chapter 20, verse 11. I saw a great white throne and the one who was sitting on it, and in his presence, what? Earth and sky, heaven and earth vanished. Chapter 21, verse 1. I then saw what? You that one. And you are. The first heaven and the first earth had disappeared now. There was no longer any space. Chapter 22. Verse 1. All that's been happening in between there and here is a description of what this place is like. So we're sort of coming into the middle of it. Chapter 22, verse 1. Then the angel showed me the river of life rising from the throne of God and of the Lamb, and flowing crystal clear. Down the middle of the city street, on either bank of the river, was a tree of life, which bear 12 crops of fruit in a year, one in each month, and the leaves of which are the cure of relations. First, the destruction will be abolished. The throne of God and of the Lamb will be in the city. His servants will worship him. They will see him face to face. And his name will be written on their foreheads. Night will be abolished. They will not need lamplight or sunlight, because the Lord God will be shining on them, and they will reign forever and ever. He's in the new heaven. On the throne. In the middle of his people. Thank you for that. Thank you for that. In the middle of his people. When the earth is no more. When the earth is no more. Where is Jesus? On earth, in the middle of his church, he believes. Where's Jesus? In heaven. All of human history is controlled. Where's Jesus? In heaven, welcoming home those who have died in and for their faith. Where's Jesus? On earth, standing with those who stand for God. Where's Jesus? On earth, winning permanent victory by the power of his love. Where's Jesus? In the new heaven, on the